Procrastination is not laziness. It is fear in disguise. If you have a massive to-do list, but you're sitting on the couch scrolling through social media because you just don't know where to start, this video is for you because today we're fixing overwhelm-induced procrastination. Let's say you're 3 days from a deadline that you promised yourself you would never miss, but you haven't started. What happens? Your chest tightens, but your phone buzzes with something totally unrelated to the promise you made yourself. And what do? Yeah, you check it immediately. You know exactly what you're doing. You've done it 100 times. Heck, you've probably done it 1,000 times. You, my friend, are procrastinating. And here's what most productivity advice will not tell you. That feeling, you know, that specific cocktail of dread and adrenaline flooding through your nervous system right now? Well, that might be just about the most powerful tool that you have never consciously weaponized.
Your Success DNA Podcast. Your success is in your DNA.
All right. Most people dread fear like an obstacle to be overcome. They try to meditate it away. They build systems just to avoid it. But what if the real game is not eliminating that fear? What if it's learning to redirect it like a sniper rifle aimed right at your own heart of resistance? I spent the last 6 months running an experiment on myself. I took a month's worth of work, you know, the kind of work that normally bleeds across the calendar in scattered fragments and keeps getting pushed and keeps getting renegotiated and keeps getting half finished. And I deliberately created artificial conditions designed to trigger maximum psychological pressure, not the healthy, sustainable kind, the kind that makes you like buzz and vibrate. You know the kind I'm talking about because you've experienced it. Otherwise, you still wouldn't be listening to me right now. The kind that keeps you awake at 3 a.m., but not from insomnia, but from momentum that you just can't seem to turn off. Here's what happened. And more importantly, here's what I learned about the neuroscience of fear that nobody is out there teaching you in those $1,000 productivity courses. Yeah, here's it. Here we go. The first thing I did was set a fake public deadline, not a real one. Stakes don't work when they're only internal. I told 5 people that I respected, including a business associate, that I would complete an entire quarter's worth of strategic content and client deliverables by the end of week 2. Not week 4, week 2. I set the deadline for a public accountability call where I'd present all the finished work. I made it non-negotiable. I told them the cost was not optional. If I missed it, I'd donate $500 to a charity that I actively disliked. I know it sounds theatrical, but it is, and that's the point. Your brain doesn't distinguish between real social consequences and just perceived ones. When you tell someone of authority or someone you respect that you'll do something by a specific date and attach a cost to failure, your amygdala doesn't go around fact-checking you. No, it doesn't. It assumes the threat is real. It starts to flood your system with cortisol and flood your system with adrenaline. You are no longer procrastinating because you're afraid of your own judgment. You're afraid of something external, something that might actually happen to you. Researchers call the underlying mechanism hyperbolic discounting. Motivation increases exponentially as the deadline approaches, not linearly. Pierce Steele's temporal motivation theory formalizes exactly this. Motivation is a function of expectancy and value divided by impulsiveness and delay. Compress the delay, you spike the stakes. Your brain treats the task like a survival event. This is why the fake deadline works. It's not a trick. It's behavioral science. This is where most productivity systems fail, like a house of cards. It's going to crumble in on themselves. They try to make you disciplined from a place of calm. They ask you to build habits. They ask you to trust the process. They ask you to delay gratification. And that's all well and good. It's actually noble. It also, for most humans, is nearly impossible when you're facing the gap between who you are and who you want to become. And here's the part the self-help industry 100% glosses over. Researcher Tim Pitchell spent decades showing that procrastination, it's not a time management failure at all. It's emotion misregulation. Yeah, hear that again. It's not time management failure. It's emotion misregulation. You're not avoiding the task. You're avoiding the feeling that the task produces, which means the fix is not a better schedule. It's not laying it out on your calendar in nice little easy chunks. It's changing what your nervous system is afraid of. You need friction. You need danger. You need your nervous system to believe that not doing it is more painful than doing it. Huh? By day 4, something strange started to happen. I wasn't just working. I was operating from a different part of my brain entirely. The prefrontal cortex, you know, the part that handles executive function and impulse control, it had basically been overridden by my limbic system, the ancient survival mechanism that doesn't do nuance. It doesn't even know what nuance is all about. When your body believes a predator is chasing you, it doesn't matter how tired you are. It doesn't matter how uninspired you are. Your legs get your body up and they move. I started scheduling work in 90-minute blocks, not because I read that that was the optimal time, even though I had, but because my anxiety couldn't sustain itself beyond the window without some sort of micro break. What I didn't know at the time was that this accidentally aligned with something called the ultradian rhythm, right? The basic rest activity cycle, first mapped by sleep researcher Nathaniel Cleetman. Your brain naturally oscillates between high focus and recovery states in roughly 90-minute intervals. We talked about this in a previous episode as well, both during sleep and during your waking hours. My panic had literally reverse engineered my own neural science. After 90 minutes, I felt like I could breathe. I would pause and take a breath. I'd give myself like 20 minutes to pace, to check my phone, to step outside and really just disconnect from the work. And then I'd reset. The fear would spike again almost immediately. Wash, rinse, repeat. That's not discipline, ladies and gentlemen. That was domesticated panic attack just cycling itself. And here's the part I don't think anyone really wants to admit. I finished, not just on time, a full week early. And the quality wasn't rushed. The quality was sharp. It was on point. It was some of my best work, actually. Not because fear makes you perfect, but because fear kills a part of your brain that second guesses every damn thing you're trying to do. Is that the right color? Oh, is that the right caption? No, I was just getting stuff done. When the amygdala takes the wheel, dopamine stops rewarding you for planning and starts rewarding you for executing. Yeah, it stops rewarding you until you get up off your ass and you do something. Fear doesn't let you edit while you create. Fear doesn't let you compare yourself to someone else's finished product while yours is still being formed. Fear says, move or die. There's no other option. Yeah. Now, the hidden cost starts to appear around day 10. You begin to notice that you're not just productive during the deadline window, you're kind of miserable. Your relationships suffer because you're irritable and you're unavailable. You snap at your partner for asking you about dinner plans because their question feels like an interruption while you're stuck in a war zone. Maybe you skip the gym. Maybe you skip social plans. Maybe you skip everything that isn't directly tied to that deadline. Your sleep gets a little weird. You fall asleep instantly, like your body is demanding rest as payment for the adrenaline overdraft that you've been cashing for the entire day. But you wake up at 4 a.m. with your mind already racing through all the next steps and task lists that you have. This is sustainable for about 2 weeks, maybe three if you're an exceptionally driven or very stubborn person. After that, you're going to hit a wall that feels less like fatigue and feels more like your nervous system is staging a mutiny. The cortisol that was your rocket fuel starts to become a toxin, specifically your HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenaline system that regulates your entire stress response. It starts to get a little discombobulated. It starts to dysregulate. Your immune system gets weaker. You catch the cold that everyone else has been fighting because of that immune system being weaker. So I did something that the productivity obsessed people do not talk about enough. I stopped, completely stopped, for an entire week after hitting my deadline. I didn't work on anything goal-oriented. I didn't try optimizing. I didn't try planning. I just let myself exist in the aftermath. And I noticed something in that aftermath that's crucial. The fear was gone, but so was the momentum. And when I tried to go back to normal productivity the following week, I felt like I was moving in slow motion, like molasses on a cold January morning. You feel me? You know what I'm talking about? Any of you experience that? This is a trap that no one else talks about, that no one else sees until they've lived it. Fear-based productivity works, period. Hard stop right there. And it works extremely well. It works almost too well, but it is not a tool that you can use indefinitely. It's like a performance-enhancing drug. And like all drugs, your body will adapt. And the next time you try to trigger that same level of panic, it doesn't hit the same. You're going to need a bigger dose. You're going to need a shorter deadline. You're going to need higher stakes. You're going to need more public commitment. The escalation is a little invisible at first. And then suddenly, you're making decisions that feel increasingly insane just to recreate that same productive state. And so here's a mechanism underneath that nobody names out there explicitly. You're not actually becoming more productive through discipline or habit formation. You're becoming more productive through chronic stress. And your body, trust me, your body is keeping score. The real question isn't whether fear-based deadlines work, because let's be honest, they do. The question is, what's the cost? Yeah. And once you ask that question, then you have to ask the next one. Are you willing to pay it? I tried a modified version of this for the next phase. And instead of a single artificial deadline with maximum stakes, I created a series of smaller ones, spaced a little further apart, with individual consequences, but accumulating some social pressure. Week one, I tell one person. Week two, I'd tell three people. Week three, I'd make it public. The fear never reached the same crescendo it had the other way, but it remained sustained at a level that felt manageable. The work still gets done. The exhaustion is real, but not catastrophic, which is kind of where you want it, right? But here's maybe where this might get a little uncomfortable and why I'm telling you this instead of just handing you some productivity template like everyone else. Even knowing the cost, even knowing the psychological toll, I still chose to use this method sometimes, not all the time, but for the big projects, for the things that matter, for work that's genuinely important but doesn't have a natural deadline, I still weaponize fear. I still create the artificial pressure. I still make the public commitments that I'm terrified of failing at. Because here's the truth that this self-help industry does not want to admit. Most people don't actually want balance, and most people don't actually want sustainability. No, I'm sorry. Even you, maybe. You want results. And so do they. They want to look back at the month that just passed and feel like they accomplished something extraordinary. And they're willing to suffer to feel that. They're willing to live in discomfort if it means closing the gap between where they are and where they're trying to get to, where they want to be. And the gap is the wound. The fear is the antiseptic. It burns, but it works. So the first layer is this. Knowing you're weaponizing fear means that you start to recognize when other people are doing it to you. You see the artificial urgency in marketing. You see the FOMO in social media. If you haven't seen it before, you're going to start seeing it now because I'm calling it out to you. You start to feel the manufactured deadline pressure when someone tells you that the deal expires today only. You've seen them. You start to become immune to certain manipulations because you understand the mechanism better. But you also become complicit. You start using the same tools and you start using them knowingly. And you start using them on the people around you. You create deadline pressure at work because you know it works. You deploy scarcity language because you've seen it move people. You become the thing you want to avoid. And the worst part, it works on them too. They respond exactly the way you responded. They get stressed. They accelerate. They produce. They suffer. And they blame themselves for not being disciplined enough to handle it on a sustained basis. So, Tracy, what's the real answer? What's the honest version? Well, I'm sorry to tell you, there isn't one. You can use fear strategically and just accept the cost. You can reject it entirely and accept slower progress. You can try to split the difference and pretend you found balance, which is mostly just suffering in slow motion while feeling guilty about not getting this stuff done or doing either one of the choices fully. You're going to have to choose. But at least now you know you're choosing with eyes wide open. Now you know that fear isn't a bug in your productivity system. It is the secret engine. The question is not just whether you're willing to be the one driving it or whether you'll let someone else hold the controls while it drives you or drives them. The gap between who you are and who you want to be doesn't close itself. Nope. Sorry to tell you. Sometimes it requires that you scare yourself into motion. Now, you know, if this episode is hitting a little different, and if you felt the tension between knowing what works and questioning the cost, then you need to be in the room where we go even deeper every single week. This is the Unleash Your Success DNA newsletter, where I break down the mindset shifts and habit upgrades and the rebellious truths that don't always make it onto this podcast. It's built for the aspiring entrepreneurs and my 9-to-5 escapees, for everyone really, but I do focus on those folks because they're done with the surface level advice and they're ready to jump in and do the real work. No fluff, no toxic positivity, just the kind of truth that makes you uncomfortable enough to actually get up off your butt and move. So head on over to Your Success DNA and subscribe a couple of emails a week, because here's the thing, you already know what you need to do. You just need someone in your corner who refuses to let you forget it. Maybe sometimes slaps you upside the head or gives you a pat on the back. Either one. Okay. So all that, here's your whiskered wisdom that I want you to walk away with today. Fear is not your enemy. Unconscious fear is, however, your enemy. The difference between the people who use fear as fuel and the people who get burned by it comes down to one thing: intention. Are you letting fear happen to you, or are you choosing to deploy it? Most people spend their entire lives running from the feeling. The dark horses, you, your folks, my success seekers, you learn to run with it on your terms and towards something that matters to you. Fear doesn't care about your excuses, period. It only cares about your next move. So here's the one action you should take this week when you're just finished listening to this podcast. And I want you to do this today, not someday. Write down one project, one goal, and one thing you've been circling for weeks or for months, right? Maybe something you just keep pushing on. And then tell one person, just one, that you will have a meaningful first step completed by this time next week. Not the whole thing, just that first real move, that first real step forward. Make it real by making it witnessed. That's it. One project, one person, one week. My friend, have just weaponized fear consciously, intentionally, and on your own terms. All right? All right, my success seekers, let's bring this all home. Today, we went somewhere most productivity podcasts are a little too polished to go. We talked about that secret engine underneath your best work and the cost of running it too hot for too long. You're keeping them RPMs pegged in the red for way too long. I didn't sugarcoat it. I didn't just hand you a 10-step system and call it a day. No, because that's not what you came here for, is it? No, of course not. You came here because you're done pretending that the default life is enough for you. You want something better. You want something more fulfilling. You want something, right? And you came here because somewhere deep down, you know the gap between who you are and who you're meant to be is closable. And you're willing to do what it takes to close it. Fear is real. The cost is real. But so is your potential. So stop circling. Stop milling around and start moving. Is this episode maybe even fired you up just a little bit? Maybe share it with someone else who needs to hear it. Drop a comment. Tell me how you're going to weaponize your fear. I really want to know. Okay? And with that, I'm going to leave you as I always do. Think successfully and take action.
Your Success DNA podcast. Your success is in your DNA.